We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back into the huddle on ESPN Upstate, Friday edition, the 21st of September. Greg McKinney, Richmond Weaver, and Patrick Brown. Lonzo off today. He's back on Monday. Hopefully, if he's recovered from turning 50 years old, he's back with us on Monday. We have Bob Costello with the Greenville News on the line with us to talk a little high school football as we get to stay on schedule tonight, Bob, and play our games on Friday night. That's a good feeling, right?
Yeah. Yeah, back to Friday, which is the norm. Nice to see.
So the news that came out earlier this week is we'll get, for our purposes up here in the upstate, we'll get a bye week at the end of the season to let the eastern part of the state catch up. This has kind of become a habit in recent years, right?
Yeah, this is the third time in 4 years that it's we're extending the season. So I guess, depending on your perspective, I think if you make the playoffs, I talked to Hillcrest coach Greg Porter earlier this week, and as he said, if you make the playoffs, can be a good thing because you can rest up and get ready. And, of course, as you said, if you're hot, you might not want to take a week off. But, for the most part, it's a good chance to regroup and reset and get ready for the playoffs. But, it's been that way. I mean, the Hurricanes and that kind of stuff has sort of taken over third time in 4 years. And who knows? Apparently, I talked to Jerome Singleton, too, and he said that the executive committee, thinks that this is going to hold up and it's just going to be 1 week, even though there are some people, as we know, who are still struggling.
Yeah, and some people that will miss a second game here, but it really doesn't matter if it's not region games. Those are the things that make the difference that you have to make up, I guess.
Right. That's the thing. They're going to make sure they get in all the region games and it should take just the 11 weeks, or I guess now 12 with the week zero. So, yeah, and as long as they get the region games in, they should be set to go with just that one extra week, and that's what counts.
All right, Bob, you mentioned Hillcrest as we start looking at the games and Greg Porter. Big game for those guys, the Rams, tonight as Spartanburg comes over to Greenville. Spartanburg Vikings off to a slow start here. I know Hillcrest has had some success against Spartanburg before, and they got to feel pretty good about this one tonight, don't they?
Yeah, it's interesting because Spartanburg had won all 11 games between the teams until the second round of the playoffs last year, and Hillcrest finally got a win, and Spartanburg is, struggling a little bit. I mean, they played some really good teams, but they've lost three in a row, and Hillcrest is coming off a loss. Granted, it was Norman. It was a real tough game, but Hillcrest, in that region, on one hand, you do have a tiny margin for error because everybody's beating up on one another every week, but on the other hand, with a loss, your margin of error is sort of sliced. So, I think Hillcrest knows it, and you lose that first one and it gets a little tougher. So, playing at home, and I think it's going to be tough, but I think Hillcrest seems to rate at least a little bit of an edge. It's a tough region, though. Like I say, Spartanburg has played some really tough teams, and coming off of, I think it was 26-7, lost to Burns, yep. And Burns has been pretty good. But in that region, you're going to see a game every week. So, that's going to be a tough one. But like I said, I think Hillcrest might be just a tad better.
Easley plays at J.L. Mann tonight. Mann's still kind of struggling a little bit, looking for some magic tonight. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, and both of them, the last three games for each of them, they've pretty much been routed. They easily did start off week earlier and did get a win, beat Pickens. And I think Easley's probably a little bit better, but Yeah, but both of them have really, really struggled. And this is, a region game. So, and Mann hasn't won for a while because they lost their last, maybe four at the end of last year. So it's been a while. But this is one of those that somebody has to win. And, I think easily might rate a slight edge in this one. I just think Mann is struggling just a little more. And they've played good teams. That's one thing. They've both gotten blown out the last 3 weeks, but they've played some pretty decent teams too. I mean, they're playing Daniel and Hannah, and those kind of teams have been pretty good this year. So I'm sure they'll be glad to line up against one another.
Malden gets Riverside at home tonight. Malden coming off a tough matchup against Gaffney last week, but they kind of held their own a little bit and scored a few points. The Mavericks will be big favorites tonight.
Yeah, oh yeah, Riverside's still struggling, and Malden, it's kind of tough. Malden really is pretty good, but you're looking at in that region, Region 2, I think they have four of the top nine teams in the state in 5A. Because you're looking at Dorman and Gaffney and Hillcrest and Burns. And so Malden could be, a pretty good team and not go to the playoffs. They're going to have to beat somebody. Now they get another crack at Hillcrest, and they came pretty close the first time. So, but that's a tough region. And you're looking at, like you said earlier, Spartanburg. Isn't there two Boiling Springs? I mean, that's... That one is loaded, no doubt, the best 5A region in the state. And Riverside's got to play all those. So, yeah, real struggle for Riverside. But Malden's pretty good.
Wade Hampton goes to Woodmont tonight. I know Jet Turner's Woodmont team hasn't won yet, but they held Greenwood to 9 points last week. There's something to be said for that.
Oh, yeah. Woodmont's, neither team has won, but Woodmont has played pretty well. They've played well in spots and even some of the games where the scores were lopsided and then they sort of let them get away. Because when you're playing that running attack where you just don't have much of a margin for error and then you let it get away a little bit, it's tough to come back. So, they play keep away and, like you said, 9-0 against, Greenwood is that's pretty tough because Greenwood's tough to stay with no matter what the season. So that says a lot for Woodmont, and I think that they really are a lot better this year. You kind of have to see them to see that they look a lot better. It's just been tough getting a win, but I really think tonight might be the night. Wade Hampton has improved as well, but I think Woodmont might be able to play that keep away a little bit better tonight.
All right, Southside High goes to Berea tonight. Southside was pretty impressive against Christchurch, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. And they did it without Jalen Calhoun. He had an ankle injury. So they had a sophomore quarterback who might – I'm not sure he might be playing again tonight because they weren't sure whether they were going to play Jalen tonight because they might just hold him out. Berea, has been struggling. This sophomore, Jamie Gamble, threw for over 400 yards and maybe four touchdowns. They kept it rolling. And the defense played well. Braden Bennett ran for almost 300 yards. So they had a stack of offense. And obviously Jalen Calhoun is a great player, great talent, but Southside has a lot of good players. So, that's probably going to be another offensive show again tonight for Southside.
Blue Ridge, we had their offensive coordinator and our former co-host here, Josh Phillips, on earlier. Big trip for them this week. They're down in Florida to take on Vernon. I know they visited Florida State, Doak Campbell Stadium. So they're having a lot of fun. What about this matchup? Do you know much about Vernon?
I don't know a whole lot. 1-1 to this point. It's a Class A school down in Florida. They get about 400 enrollment and, it should be a good match for Blue Ridge. And Blue Ridge, they haven't fared real well as James Turn said, haven't done so well on Friday nights, so he's kind of hoping this trip can help them get back on track. But I actually saw them last week against Travelers Rest, and got some nice players. Braden Enloe, the quarterback, can throw the ball a little bit, and I think this is one that they can get, because they were, really looking forward. I was out at Blue Ridge the other day, and the guys were really looking forward to the trip, but I think they were just as excited about the game. Mm-hmm. So I think it helps to get there, get over. It's not one of those long trips like getting in the bus Friday morning or Friday afternoon and riding to Somerville and having to get off the bus and go play.
Right.
They actually, left Thursday, stayed overnight, got up. They'll be rested and ready to go. So I think that will help a lot, and I think they'll be ready, and I think this is one they can get.
Eastside off to another good start, but a tough draw tonight as they go over to Chapman.
Yeah, there's a buzzsaw for you. Mm-hmm. Easily the best team that Eastside has seen, and that'll be tough. Big test for the Eastside defense. Great going into the region. I mean, you might as well see about as good as you're going to see offensively. Chapman's, they were state runner or state champ 2 years ago, and state runner up last year in 3A. And I mean, that's in 3A, but they could easily be playing, 4A, and they could play with some of the teams in 5. I mean, Chapman's been pretty darn good, and they're averaging 50 this year. So they're really good. This will be really tough for Eastside, but Dan Morgan wanted to beef up the schedule, and Mark Hodge has a team for him. So if you wanted to beef it up, this is a good way to do it.
Yeah, no doubt. And speaking of long trips, all the way down to Hilton Head for Christ Church, coming off of that tough one against Southside last week.
Yeah, this will be a tough one too. Hilton Head is a 4A team and it's not just any 4A. I mean, they're 3-1 at this point. So, I mean, they've played pretty well, and coming off their first loss, but the team they lost to, May River, is a pretty good 3A team. That's I think they're still in the top. They've been a top 10 team. I think they might still be in the top 10. So this is like I just got done saying, this is one where you do have to make the trip, get off the bus and go play, and not just play, but play a really good team. So this will be a tough one for Christchurch, especially with the way Christchurch has been struggling in the first place.
Yeah, speaking of tough ones, Carolina's still looking for that win. And this Walhalla team they have to go visit has been rolling up some points.
Yeah, not good. We're 31 and counting. Although, if there is a bright spot, they played Liberty last week and had a season-high 28 points. And quarterback Austin Neese threw for can't remember, over 200 yards. I think he had 4 touchdowns. Offensively, they played well. So, might feel pretty good about at least playing well offensively, and came within 10 for the second time this season. So, hey, there is hope. You never know. Like I said, you have to play. Yeah. So, but you're right. Walhalla has been putting up points, so you're going to have to put up a lot. 28 may not be enough.
Yeah. All right, let me mention one more. Southside Christian, they go to Saluda tonight, Bob. Southside Christian Sabres, how have they looked so far?
Oh, real good, real good. They've lost some games, but they've played about as tough a schedule as anybody. Really, really tough. And there's another one. I mean, they've played Charlotte Latin. That's one of the best private schools in North Carolina. They played Abbeville. That's number one in 2A. Played Woodruff. At number 5 or 6 in 3A. I mean, they've really been loading up. Now, Saluda's right there with them. I think they're 6 and 7. I think Saluda's 6, Southside Christian 7 in 2A. This is a great game, and two really good quarterbacks, because J.W. Hertzberg, Southside Christian, is really good. And I haven't seen, but I've heard a lot about Noah Bell, the quarterback from Saluda. Mm-hmm. So this one won't be over in 2 hours. This isn't this isn't Woodruff and Clinton from 1975. This might take a while, but it would be really fun to watch, because they're really good, and you'll see some good quarterback actions and some really good receivers. And I'd like to say Southside Christian has been really good. They've played what there is to play in 2A. So you know, after seeing Abbeville, and really could have won the game. Because, you know, I was watching that one, and, you know, they played with Abbeville, and Abbeville is, you know, has been the best there is in 2A for several years. So, you know, Southside Christian can play with anybody. So this will be another fun one to watch in 2A. Probably, you know, the best game, because I understand Abbeville and Hartsville was canceled. They were supposed to play tonight. And so I would say this has to be the game of the night in 2A in the state. So should be pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's a one-point game with Woodruff and Southside Christian too, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they were ahead 2 touchdowns going into the fourth quarter. So, I mean, they were right there, you know, playing with one of the best in 3A. Then they played the best in 2A. I mean, they've played with just about everybody, and they went expecting to win and have won or come darn close. So they're really good. I mean, and they're good defensively too, really good defensively. So that's a team that thinks they can win a state championship and has every reason to.
All right, Bob, maybe this will be the last really hot, muggy Friday night. You hope so?
Yeah, it's going to be hot and muggy. Yeah. But you won't hear me complain because I can't stand it when it gets really cold. So if it can stay in the middle, I'm okay with that. But,
yeah.
You know, but I don't want it to be really cold, so I'll take this over really cold.
All right. Bob Costello, Greenville News, covering high school football, greenvilleonline.com. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks so much, Greg. Have a great weekend.
Take care. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment. In the huddle, going to hear from Adam Schefter about some of the injuries to NFL stars going into this weekend of the National Football League. And then Rich Take on Sports coming up as well. Stay with us in the huddle on ESPN Upstate. Hello, breaking Major League Baseball news today. See how big of a distraction this is going to be for the Cubs. Addison Russell placed on administrative leave by Major League Baseball after his ex-wife opened up about abuse allegations against the shortstop in a blog post this week. Melissa Reedy Russell wrote that she suffered physical and emotional abuse throughout their 2-year marriage and that the mistreatment severely affected her. So Addison Russell has been placed on administrative leave in accordance with the Joint Major League Baseball Players Association domestic violence policy. That from a statement today by baseball. There were previous allegations by a friend of Reedy Russell triggering a Major League Baseball investigation that remains open. Major League Baseball opened that probe in June of 2017. So we'll see. Know how big a deal that's going to be for the Cubs, but it certainly has to be a distraction. Pretty serious allegations being made, and now Addison Russell on administrative leave. Happened today, just a little earlier today, from Major League Baseball. 844-477-3776 is our phone number here in the huddle. Healthcare text line is 71307. Headed into this NFL weekend with a bunch of key games here as we go into week 3 and a lot of injury issues coming into the weekend. Adam Schefter at ESPN has details on some of those.
Case Keenum, the Broncos quarterback, did not practice yesterday due to some knee irritation. Now, he's supposed to practice today, and the Broncos believe that he'll be fine to play on Sunday. However, it's worth monitoring that knee injury. Anytime a player misses practice time as he did, that's always problematic. The Broncos travel back east to play the Baltimore Ravens. Tough defense, which has the extra days to rest coming off the Thursday night loss in Cincinnati. But Keenum, again, resting that knee yesterday. As for Marcus Mariota, still has struggled to regain feeling in his finger from the pinched nerve in his elbow from an injury he suffered on opening day. He's been throwing some at practice, but it's no sure thing that he's going to be able to play Sunday at Jacksonville against a very tough defense. With Mariota nursing that injury in his hand, Blaine Gabbert has continued to take reps with the Titans starting offense. We'll see whether they can get Mariota back in time to play Sunday. If not, it'll be Blaine Gabbert once again, Jack.
All right, Shefty, nothing new here, but there is some running backs banged up as well. What's the latest there?
Well, we got an issue here with LeSean McCoy where he's got the cracked rib cartilage. And again, questionable for this week and whether he'll be able to play against a tough Minnesota defense right now. Not a simple injury for him to overcome. He's played through that cracked rib cartilage before. He's been limited in 2 straight practices. the past 2 days for LeSean McCoy. If he can't play, that's going to be another obstacle for an offense that's already struggling at this particular time. Dalvin Cook right now has been dealing with a hamstring injury that he suffered last week against the Green Bay Packers. Now, after the game, he said he thought it was fine, but he did not practice Wednesday, and that's problematic. Again, coming off that knee injury last year, now is the hamstring this year. Maybe that's not all that surprising that something like this could happen, but if he can't play, Latavius Murray would start against the Buffalo Bills, and I think they'll be careful with Cook this week. Leonard Fournette has been back at practice some, missed last week's game with that hamstring injury against the New England Patriots. And T.J. Yeldon also is obviously a question mark for this week. He returned to practice in a limited capacity Wednesday, and I think the Jaguars are hoping to get him back against a team that beat them twice last year. Devonta Freeman, the Falcons head coach Dan Quinn, has said, no, it's not true that he's going to miss multiple weeks, but again, I was told that he's going to miss 2 to 3 weeks. He didn't practice again Wednesday. This would be the second straight game that he misses. I believe that he will not be able to play this week against the Saints. So the Falcons have yet to make that official. If he can't play, of course, then Tevin Coleman would be the running back that would be out there. And, of course, they're waiting to see whether Julio Jones is out there. He's been dealing with a calf injury. So the Falcons have some injuries to some of their offensive playmakers going on right now, Jack.
Tons of injuries. Of course, Carson Wentz is going to be back for the Eagles. But Jay Ajayi and Darren Sproles ruled out. Both of them out. Have not been able to practice all this week. Still questionable, Alshon Jeffrey, the former Gamecock. Also, left tackle Jason Peters is questionable for the game as well. Man, it's just a ton of injuries just 2 weeks in to this NFL season. The list just keeps on growing.
It does. And a lot of fantasy football players, owners are not too happy.
Scramble, man.
Scramble mode. That's right. Got to pick up somebody, and I do have Jay Ajayi.
Uh-oh.
So I'm in trouble.
Yeah. You know, who's your backup? You better find one fast.
It's actually Chris Coleman. I think it's one of my backups. Mm-hmm. Guys, I don't even know. That's the problem.
Who?
Exactly. Well, here's the thing. I've gotten to the point now, I've done fantasy football for so long, it doesn't matter if I draft the team or if I have the computer draft the team.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. So I just let the computer draft the team, and we'll see what happens. That's it.
I find fantasy football to be frustrating. I don't even play it anymore.
Yeah. Well, I almost didn't this year. Same with me. I've been playing it.
It's frustrating when you have like a group of like your college friends that you play with, and the whole time, I didn't have the greatest season last year in fantasy football, but don't put it on social media that I didn't have a great season, okay? And even in photos that don't, like on Instagram, someone took a photo of a sunset and it's like Patrick looking on the horizon trying to get a better fantasy football team. I'm like, when did I get to bring... How did I get brought up into this?
Yeah, don't. You're taking all the brunt of the embarrassment, right? Yeah.
I am.
Yeah, suck the life out of it. Any fun? Gone, done. All right, going to talk a little golf. Rich Take on Sports coming up next. Stay with us. This is The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Welcome back to Huddle, ESPN Upstate. A little news out of Boone, North Carolina. Appalachian State has extended Scott Satterfield's contract through 2023. All right, pretty good deal. That's a 2-year extension. 42-23 record for Scott Satterfield. Back-to-back Sun Belt Conference Championships in 2016 and 2017. And 3 straight bowl victories from 2015 to 2017. So congratulations. I think Scott Satterfield's done a nice job, and he gets a couple more years added on.
Yeah, I think they want to try to do anything to keep him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he has that team very competitive. And obviously, I mean, even competitive with some of the big boys. We saw what he almost did.
Penn State this year. They got the Gamecocks next year, too. I'm already nervous.
Watch out.
Already wondering about that one, yeah. All right, let's get to Rich Take on Sports next in The Huddle.
Well, what's on my mind this Friday is golf. We're seeing the FedEx Championship or the Tour Championship, the FedEx standings going on at East Lake, and Tiger Woods making his move, and one of the guys that was just outside of the top 30. He ended up, I think, number 72 in the standings right now, and that's Stewart Cink. And many of you might know Stewart Cink. He's been on the PGA Tour for 22 years. I mean, he's been one of those models of consistency from 2004 to 2009 in the official golf world rankings. He was actually in the top 10 and finished in number 5 in 2008. So this guy has been there for a long time. And I got to sit down with him several weeks ago and talk about what it's like life on the PGA Tour. And this is episode number 81 of the podcast, Rich Take on Sports. And you can find that content on any podcasting platform. And also, if you just want to go to a one-stop place, just go to the website, richtakeonsports.com. But in this conversation with Stuart, he talks about his journey and some of the things that happened in his life that really changed the trajectory of his life drastically. He was a sophomore at Georgia Tech, and his girlfriend at the time becomes pregnant, and that changes their life significantly. They get married, they decide to have the baby, and that changes his golf game tremendously. And it's a great story of hearing about that. But one of the things that I want to share today is the 2009 British Open, the Open Championship. And if you don't remember this, this was the magical run by Tom Watson at the age of 59, and how somehow he was able to get enough to be in contention for the championship and actually went into a playoff with Stuart Sink. But everybody was cheering for Tom Watson, very similar to the situation at the PGA Championship this past year with Brooks Koepka and Tiger Woods. But so here's Stuart Sink talking about that 2009 Open Championship and how there was one point where he almost didn't even make it to the playoff hole. Here's Stuart Sink.
In that Open that I won with Watson being involved, I had my mind focused on what Watson was doing because I was really curious and totally absorbed by the story he was writing. And it wasn't until literally probably about early in the back nine on Sunday when I thought, okay, well, that's enough. Now it's time to...
It's game time.
Yeah. And I was playing great. I was probably no more than... I don't know if I was ever more than 4 shots back the whole tournament. I mean, I was always in the thick of it. Played well the first day. Even the whiff. I made double bogey on that hole, but it was a day when a lot of people were shooting high scores, and I think I shot 1 or 2 over. You know, I played good golf that day, even though I had the whiff and made double. But I was always in the mix, and Tom was always distracting me with his run. I never played with him that week until the playoff. I had the distraction of Tom. And then when I got in the playoff, knowing that the whole crowd was going to be pulling for him and completely understanding that and not being bitter about it or anything, it just gave me something else to sort of challenge myself with, I guess. And it was a different challenge than just hitting the fairway on the first playoff hole. It was like, how am I going to react to a crowd that's not on my side? I mentioned Justin Leonard is one of my good friends. Tom Lehman's another one of my good friends. Both of those guys, I saw them in the crowd during the playoff. You think they were there to watch me?
They were there to watch Tom,
Heck
right?
Yes, they were. They were there to watch Tom Watson make history.
Yes.
And
here, 59 years
my
old.
My good friends, like personally, really good friends watching the playoff. Oh. So I had a lot of introspection to do. How was I going to handle that?
For sure.
Yeah, and it was a good part of the reason I think I went on to win and played really great at the end was because I had like a real purpose about that. Yeah.
Now, I've heard the story at that playoff, you were intentional about wanting to show up second to the first playoff hole. Mm-hmm. And so you go to a porta potty right there and you just wait. Mm-hmm. Describe that. And I mean, what are you doing in the porta potty? What are you thinking about and what are you waiting for? How long did you have to wait?
The journey to get to the porta potty was the funny part. I knew for some reason at Turnberry, they started the playoff on the 5th hole, which was like the farthest one from the clubhouse. I don't know why they did it, but we played 5, 6, 17, and 18. And I understand why they finished on 18, but why they started on 5, I got no idea. So we take all these golf carts over there, they call buggies. There's so many buggies that take people out to the tee because you've got media, you've got caddies and players, officials, you know, lots of buggies headed that way. And you're not going on the same direction as any hole, you're going across all the holes. So the carts are just going like across fairways, across humps and high rough and just through all kind of stuff. It's just like through the mounds. There's buggies everywhere. And the drivers had instructions that you're supposed to take your party, whoever they are, to the tee. And when we got almost to the tee, probably 200 yards from the tee, I told her that I wanted to go to the porta potty, which was about 70 yards or so off the tee. And I knew it because we played there all week. There's a porta potty hidden in the gorse bushes. And she said, no, not allowed. We have to go to the tee. And I said, we're going to the porta potty. And she's like, okay. In Scottish, you know, yes. Okay. So we kind of veered off. We were like the calf that got separated from the herd.
Yes.
We veer off. And as we veered off, we got off the track where all the other buggies had made. And we're in a buggy without a top. So we go across one of the fairways. And there's a gallery rope across. You know, there's two metal stakes in the gallery rope, yeah, about, I would say, right about steering column height. And she didn't see it. And as we approached the rope going full speed in the cart, I jump out. She barrels into the rope. It's a good thing the steering column caught it, because it would have possibly hurt her.
Yes.
I mean, the rope stakes would have come out of the ground. It wouldn't have really hurt
her. But still.
Lodges underneath the steering column, pulls the stakes out. They go flying up in the air. I'm standing in grass up to, you know, we'll just say my thighs. And my heart is just pounding, because now we've had this near accident. I'm standing in high weeds. There's dust everywhere. The lady in the buggy is just like gripped onto the steering wheel, about to rip it off, like with her head down. And I didn't know what to do. So I just said, I'll just walk the rest of the way. So I go into the Port-a-John there. I had about another 50 or 60 yards to walk through the weeds, and I just disappear in there. And, my caddy went onto the tee, and I just go in there. I'm by myself, and it's a really windy day outside. But you know, in a Port-a-John, it's really calm, and it is just quiet. Except I can hear I'll never forget this. I can hear the sound of like the gorse bush and the weeds around the Port-a-John area, kind of like brushing up against the sides, like with the wind, you know. And above that sound, I just waited to hear the tee. And when I heard the applause start. You know, and then it turned into sort of a cheer, and then it turned into like a holler, and then it was like a full-on, let's go, Tom! You know, everybody was just going crazy at the tee. There was probably a couple hundred people. Because, again, you know, we're on the fifth hole.
Yes.
We're way out by
way
the coast.
Out.
And so that was my cue to pop out.
To go out there.
And I just I spent the whole time in the Port-a-John just kind of looking in the mirror, and I was sweating a lot because it was cold outside, but I was in a sweater, and I come in the confines of this porta potty, and
it's a little cramped.
It's warm and it's still, and all of a sudden it's hot and my face is red, sweaty. And I'm just looking in this, you know, they have this like piece of metal on the wall that's supposed to serve as a mirror. And I'm looking in there just kind of like, okay, you just about had an accident in a golf cart. You're on your way to a playoff. You're playing against Tom Watson. The whole crowd is going to be for him. But, and it's a very important but, you're working your plan. You're in control of your situation right now, because you're letting Tom Watson get to the tee first. I just wanted Tom to hear a little applause for me. I didn't want to be on the tee engulfed in that huge uproar. So I wanted him to hear something. So as soon as I heard the applause, that's when I walked out of the Port-a-John, walked the 70 or 80 yards up towards the tee. And sure enough, when I walked to the tee, I got some applause.
You got some.
I got
at least some.
It wasn't over exuberant applause, but I got some. And I got to, you know, wave to the crowd and engage as many people around there as I could with a nice smile and let them know that, hey, you don't have to feel bad about rooting for Tom.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
Right?
I got you. I understand. Yeah. And so that, for me, was a huge way to start the playoff. It was huge, because even though there was chaos and the lady was, you know, driver was like almost like fainted because she hit the rope and all that.
It's amazing.
The story and everything. I was still working my plan, and I had a plan. I was in charge of what I was doing. I was really in control. Plus, the way the tournament finished, I had birdied 18, Tom had bogeyed 18. I felt like I had a real opportunity to make my move.
And obviously, he did make his move, as he would go on and win that playoff against Tom Watson and become a major champion and get his name etched on the claret jug. And it just shows you that in life, you never know what's going to be dealt to you, but if you can maintain focus and maintain a plan and control the controllables, and that's what Stewart was able to do. He had a plan in place, and he had a mindset that this is what he wanted to do, and even with all of the distractions, he was able to do that, and that ultimately helped him win that major championship, and also it just shows you that this is why he's been so successful on a 22-year career on the PGA Tour, because he has been able to have that type of mindset each and every time he's out there.
Great story, Stewart Cink. Love that. Rich Take on Sports. Check it out. Podcast available to you as well. Richmond Weaver there. Appreciate it, Richmond. We'll take a break and come back with more. Wrap up hour number two of The Huddle. Still have three questions coming up. Still have Rico Dowdle, Gamecock running back, we'll hear from before we get out of here today, too. 844-477-3776. If you want to get in with us now in The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. So everybody was talking about the Cleveland-New York Jets NFL game last night, and rightfully so, with Cleveland breaking that long winless streak. But there was a college game last night that we ridiculed yesterday, the Temple-Tulane game, and you know, there's no reason for you to watch it except for one thing, that Temple, on their sideline play cards, you know, the signs that you hold up to call in a play, they had stormtroopers holding up the cards. Four of them. Four stormtroopers. Full stormtrooper outfits holding up the play cards. I haven't seen any kind of explanation for this. Maybe it was just to kind of be a distraction. Maybe their coach is a big Star Wars fan. I don't know. But it was different, right? Kind of cool. Did you see this live, Patrick? Or did you saw it on the...
I did not see it live, but I saw it about 2 minutes. Like, I was on Twitter, and all of a sudden I saw it, and I was like, that can't be real. And then I went to turn on the game to see if it was real, and turns out it was real.
It was real. Why they did it, I don't know.
My question is, you know that they had to ask the head coach and everyone else if they could do this.
Jeff Collins is the coach. Obviously, he had to sign off on this.
How did that get approved?
Well, maybe he's just a fun guy. I mean, I like it. You know, you want entertainment. It's a bad game, right? You want something to draw some attention to this bad Thursday night college football matchup. It's not a bad idea.
Well, the thing I want to know is, was it a bet that got lost? Was it for distraction reasons? Like, it had a purpose? We need some clarification here.
Yeah,
okay?
we know nothing about that. I haven't seen. I don't know if they ask him in the post game or not, but if they did, I can't find it anywhere.
And
why
if this is going to be a continuous thing, change the outfits every week. Okay?
No, right.
Go Darth Vader next week, okay?
Got to come up with something a little different.
Go Jedi week. 1 week.
So all Star Wars, just keep it all Star Wars.
Just keep it all Star Wars. Yeah. You could do so much with Star Wars.
I don't mind that. I really don't. Just bizarre looking, though.
With UCF, just dress up as Nick Saban. Because they have to play UCF this year.
Yeah.
So dress up as Nick Saban and have a giant championship ring just on the sidelines. If you want distractions, there you go. We're giving you ideas here.
Temple did win the game. 31-17 was the final last night. But the big story, I think, was the stormtroopers holding up the play cards. Baseball news. We have a firing in Major League Baseball. I haven't even gotten to the end of the year yet. I don't know why, you know, you do this on September 21st. What's the point? But the Texas Rangers have fired manager Jeff Banister. This will be the first consecutive losing seasons for the Rangers in 10 years. The bench coach, Don Wakamatsu, will serve as interim manager for the rest of this season, starting with tonight's game against Seattle. Final home series of the season this weekend. The Rangers announcing Banister's dismissal earlier in the day. He was fired after the 2014 season. He had a 325-313 record, so a little over 500. His first managerial job. The Rangers won the AL West title in each of his first two seasons. They lost to Toronto in the division series both times. But going into tonight's game, record is 64-88. So I get it. They were 78-84 last year. I just don't get doing it with, like, 9 games left in the season. What's the point? Why bother?
Make a headline?
I don't know. Maybe they'll be first so they can get their pick of available managers and get out front of it a little bit. I don't know. I just thought it's kind of weird. Anyway, Jeff Banister is out for the Texas Rangers. Yeah, the Rangers used to be good. So, you know, I don't guess we should be surprised that they have made this move today in Texas. Coming up, 3 questions at 3. We also have Rico Dowdle, Gamecock running back, ahead of South Carolina's trip into Nashville tomorrow to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. Get his thoughts on the South Carolina running game and getting past that Georgia loss a couple of weeks back. That's ahead. Your phone calls, too, at 844-477-3776. Health Dare text line 71307. Twitter at ESPN Upstate. We will be back for the third and final hour of the Friday Huddle next. Stay with us on ESPN Upstate.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.